You know, Walt didn't want his creations to be enshrined and frozen in time. But that's him in a nutshell. Always on to the next thing. How can we make it better or different, or what can we do next? That's Walt Disney.
Welcome to List Envy, the podcast where every week I collaborate with a guest to build a top five list on a topic they choose. I am Mark Stedman, and this week my guest is James Smith of factsandfigment.com. James is a Disney expert. He is what I am continuing to think of as a turbo enthusiast. These are not just people who like a thing, who love a thing, but people who build websites about things, blogs about things, newsletters about things, and I absolutely love it, and it just makes me so warm inside. James became interested in Disney, not just the creations, not just the studio and the parks and all that stuff, but Walt Disney himself and what he represented and what he created. So he is as much into the man behind the characters as the characters themselves. But today, I suspect we may have him back because there's so many things we can talk about. But today we are talking about our top five attractions at Disney's Magic Kingdom. This is one of the parks in Walt Disney World in Florida. You also have Disneyland in California. And of course, there's various other Disney's land or Disney's World. But today we're talking about the one in Florida. It's one I've been to five times, I think. Brits do love a Disney World. And we started our conversation by recognizing the ever-changing nature of these parks.
Yeah, so many Disney attractions that were so popular back in the 50s and 60s, they just don't carry anymore. Now, you know, in the modern world, Davy Crockett is a perfect example. That was gangbusters huge when the films came out, and there was a Davy Crockett attraction, and there were canoe rides and all these things at Disneyland. And you can barely, you know, there still is there's still a hint of it. Well, it's not really Davy Crockett. It's like the kind of the Mark Twain riverboat that goes to the island. And, you know, you get that sort of Midwestern, Southwestern, you know, frontier land type of vibe, but like Davy Crockett is scarcely, a lot of kids wouldn't even know who Davy Crockett is now, whereas he was everything, you know, back in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, it's one of those where there's a few things like, because, you know, I used to have a number of, I think I had like a four cassette Disney compilation, and I'm pretty sure the Davy Crockett song, you know, the King of the Wild Frontier, he put the crack in the Liberty Bell is one of the lines that I remember. And it didn't have any frame of reference to what any of that meant, you know, as a five-year-old kid. But, you know, it's a very singable song. And then, you know, the Tiki Room and various things like that. So, yeah, they very much live on. So we are talking about Magic Kingdom attractions, and I would love to know what your number one is. Please.
Yeah. So, and it's been either number one or number two since I was a kid. When I was a kid, I went on this attraction. I was like, wow, that is so cool. And then I've gone on it more and more as an adult, and it's just so dark in here. It's a little hard to see, but the story is still amazing. And that, of course, is the Haunted Mansion.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got your Disneyland version, you've got your Magic Kingdom version, and like so many attractions, there's differences between them. And most of my experiences with Walt Disney World. I have been to Disneyland, but by and large, most of my experiences with Walt Disney World. And to me, the Haunted Mansion and one other attraction that's on my list, it sort of embodies the creativity of Disney parks storytelling, where it's an original story, and it was created by Imagineers, and it was developed over the course of several years, and it tells its own story. It's not beholden to a TV show or a film or anything like that. And yeah, you're going there and visiting 999 happy Hans, and they're always happy to welcome one more as you'll hear on your journey. And you know, it's the perfect combination of it. Well, it's what Disney calls a dark ride. I think that, I don't know that Disney defined the term dark ride, but that's what it is, right? Anything that's indoors and illuminated on the inside. And although this one is a very dark ride, if I would. But you've got all sorts of ingenious tricks and illusions. And Disney legend Yael Gracie is one of those is one of those contributors that was always tinkering with his hands and making tricks and special effects. And you know, he perfected the trick called Pepper's Ghost, which is, and that's how you see some of the ghosts there, is because it's reflected off camera films, reflected off glass, and we don't see that part. We just see the ghost. And so, you know, that's just one of many different illusions that's put in place. And for this attraction to have, it was sort of kicked around for years. Originally, it was going to be sort of a walkthrough attraction, a museum of the weird is what they had sort of termed it. And another Disney legend, Rolly Crump, had all sorts of, he had a wild imagination. Like, you'd look at some of the stuff he would come up with and he would draw and you're like, oh my gosh, that is like going to give me nightmares. He actually gave Walt Disney nightmares one night, and Walt said to him, "Rolly, you son of a bitch. Like, I didn't sleep a wink last night because of the stuff you showed me. We need to do something with this." So that was going to be incorporated into the Haunted Mansion. And Walt died during the planning for the Disneyland version, but a little bit of Rolly's art ended up getting in there.
Famously, there is a lot more space in Florida. Is there a big difference between the two attractions?
The story is essentially the same, but there are certain functionality differences between them. You know, one of the waiting rooms, if you will, sort of the pre-show. Most of these attractions have like a pre-show, right? And the pre-show in this case is called the stretching room, and that's where you're in that room with no windows and no doors, and all of a sudden you start to slide down, like the floor starts to slide down. In Disneyland, the floor slides down, and there was a function there to get guests to a lower elevation, because then it had to go, you go up at one point in the attraction, you had to end up somehow at ground level or close to it. So there was a functional need for the fact that guests were transported down in what was essentially an elevator. In Magic Kingdom's version of Walt Disney World, the floor doesn't go down. The ceiling and the tapestries go up to reveal those classic photos where you think it's a very mundane looking, you know, a picture of a lady on just kind of standing there in a pose. And then you find out that she's on a tightrope with, you know, an alligator nipping at her heels as those stretching room, as those portraits grow. But yeah, that, you know, that there, so there are differences like that as far as the, you know, the exact construction and function of them. But the story of the two attractions is essentially the same.
Okay, that's a lovely first one. That is my number four. My number one is Space Mountain.
Okay,
this is, I think, the first. It's my first memory of what I would have considered a proper roller coaster. And I think I mean, we've been five times, I think. And the first time would have been 1992, I think. So I was nine, and I was a young nine. But I remember being, you know, never been anywhere like this before. And so that experience, I mean, we did it back in 2010, and it is, wow. Yeah, it's not quite what I remembered as a kid. A lot more rickety, a lot more boxy, a lot more wooden and cardboardy than I remembered as a kid. Because you just think, you know, you've got all the, it's again a very dark ride, and you've got all the flashing lights and all, you know, and you've got no real sense of perspective and where you're going and where you've been.
And that's the most frightening part. Yeah, you can't see, you have no idea what's happening or that you're about to turn or go up or go down.
Yeah, and nowhere near the safety apparatus and things like that that exist in roller coasters now, which is, you know, fair enough, because again, it's not the fastest ride. But in terms of memories, Yeah, that's a big one. So yeah, it's you'll have to remind me actually, because I was, when I was doing my research, because having been so many times, sometimes some of the places and the parks blend into one, and I was trying to put my finger on what used to be the, and we don't talk about it anymore because it's deeply racist, but the
you just don't Splash Mountain.
Thank you, Splash Mountain. Yeah. Yes.
That was that's my honorable mention. We can dive into that here if you'd like.
No, but yeah, we'll give that its proper due later. But yes, that's because I was trying to find it. But yeah, it's a tricky one. But yeah, Space Mountain definitely had to be my number one, because it was you know, for your first kind of proper roller coaster to be something so different and weird. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. So yeah,
you know, there's lots of attractions that are in both Disneyland and in, Walt Disney World or Magic Kingdom. This one was one of the few that was actually in Walt Disney World first. It was in Magic Kingdom in 1975, and it went to, I'm not sure the exact year it opened in Disneyland, but it was a little bit after that. But Walt Disney had a roller coaster like this, like a space-themed indoor type of roller coaster in mind for years, even before he passed away, but the technology wasn't there that could make it safe and make it practical. So this was always one of his sort of dreams as an attraction he'd like to have in Tomorrowland. And it is groundbreaking for I mean, it feels old now, because it is old, right? It's almost 50 years old.
Yeah. Wow.
But at the time, it was the first roller coaster in the world that was completely enclosed in a building. And it was the first roller coaster that was controlled by computer, as opposed to just by people saying go and, you know, moving levers and whatnot. It actually had computer controls to it. So it's groundbreaking in a couple of ways. And a little known fact is that it's actually the oldest operating roller coaster in the state of Florida. So for what that's worth, take that for what it is.
Yeah, I hope they've upgraded the computer hardware a little bit so that it's not still running on a floppy disk or.
I have to think so, but I actually have a funny personal story. So like I went on Space Mountain when I was younger, and I thought it was great. And then when we started having kids, and we went for the first time with our kids in 2013. And our daughter was six, almost seven at the time. And I said, oh, Abby, you're going to love this. And she's lukewarm on, like, you know, thrill rides, whereas our son, it loves them. But at the time, he was 2.5, so there's no way he was going on Space Mountain. But our daughter, I convinced her to go on. I said, it's a roller coaster. It's fun. It's indoors. It's like got like some bluish light, but it's kind of fun. And I guess I forgot, or maybe I just didn't remember properly, just how actual pitch black it is at times. And we went on the attraction, and in Magic Kingdom, there's three seats, one behind the other, as opposed to Disneyland, you can actually, it's like, I think it's two or three rows of two seats. So I could have sat next to my daughter in Disneyland, but not in Magic Kingdom. So she was in front of me, and we're on the attraction, and as we're going through, and it's thrilling for what it is, and I'm like, oh my gosh, she's going to be terrified. Like, I'm afraid of what I'm going to find in the seat in front of me when we get off the roller coaster. And she had tears in her eyes, and she was all exasperated. And, you know, the two of us, you know, we left, and I said, I'm sorry. I really thought I remembered it not being quite so pitch black, and I didn't think it was going to be so scary for you. So we talk about that as one of my proud, like, bad dad moments. We're like, it's going to be fine, kid. You'll be good.
I've had one or two experiences like that. But I tell you what, we did the first year we went, which I think it was 92. We also did, you know, we did Universal and stuff. And the only one, I was a young nine, but the one that I remember being petrified of, because we hadn't experienced anything like this before, was the Back to the Future ride. Because I was not prepared for this whole thing to move. And it just I just noped out so hard, because we were watching this video, and then suddenly the whole thing's moving and shaking, and you're going around the, and I spent the entire time with my head buried in the crook of my mum's arm, just having a really bad time of it.
Family memories, right?
Oh yeah.
Those are the times.
What is number two for you?
So number two, so my top two are the most story-driven attractions. And so with, I guess, no further ado than that, I'm just going to go right into it. It's Pirates of the Caribbean.
Ha-ha, yes.
And this one, so as much as Haunted Mansion used to be my favorite, now it's Pirates. And again, it's all about the story. The story of Pirates is fine, right? It's somewhat universal. Everyone knows kind of the ideas of pirates and swashbuckling and so forth. But again, this is an original story. You know, I mean, everyone now knows of Pirates of the Caribbean films and Johnny Depp and everything. And it has changed over time to incorporate some of those film elements into the attraction. But this was classic Walt Disney idea making at its best. It opened in Disneyland in 1967, just shortly after Walt had passed away. And then it actually did not open with Magic Kingdom. Magic Kingdom opened in 71. And so many people were disappointed that there was no Pirates of the Caribbean that Disney decided to put one in. That was not part of the original plan. It was going to be what was going to be called a Western River Expansion, I believe, or Western River Expedition. It was going to be very frontier-oriented attraction, but instead they decided to go this route. They originally weren't going to have one in Florida because Florida's right there in the Caribbean, and it wouldn't be as exotic a tale for folks, like as if there's pirates wandering around in Florida that it's going to be
riding alligators. You know,
commonplace. Yeah. So that was the reason why there wasn't one originally planned to be in Florida, but people liked the Disneyland version so much, and they're like, why can't we have pirates in Florida? So that's where it came in a couple of years after the park opened. But I mean, it's, you know, you've got the dark ride, you've got there's a little bit of thrills where you go down, a small little piece of flume, and you can't see what you're doing, talking about extremely dark rides. But then the world opens up, and you've got especially the pirate battle where you got the ship shooting on the town, and then you got the pirates ransacking the town, and it just feels like a party. It every time I go through there, I just want to get out of the boat and go grab a beer and just hang out on a doorstep and just immerse myself in the world of pirates. It is just that inviting to me.
It's an incredible thing that, you know, because obviously what we see now in the, you know, I guess, for, you know, over the last 20 years is the inclusion of the film assets, if you like, into this world, you know, that predated it by, yeah, what was it, 30 years or whatever, more than. And so, yeah, that was an interesting thing to, you know, the first time we'd gone, and we've probably done Pirates of the Caribbean maybe every time, you know, I've gone. And yeah, over the last time to see, oh, okay, yes, they've started incorporating, you know, a Johnny Depp here or whatever else there. And but it's incredible for what was a, you know, it's a good ride, but it's not like, you know, I don't know. It's I guess when Marvel, not that I'm a massive Marvel nerd, but like the whole story of Marvel booting up the cinematic universe with Iron Man was, you know, this sort of mid-tier character. People were like, that's, yeah, okay, good luck. It maybe not going to fly. But we now have this, you know, massive film franchise that's come out of a ride. It's quite impressive.
It is. And, you know, nowadays you don't see many original properties introduced into a theme park. It's all IP based. So you've got to have the existing IP and then you bring it into the theme park and create an attraction around it. So, you know, this is probably the most successful example of something that went in the opposite direction, where there have been numerous Disney attractions that have had films made on their premise, but none have been as successful by far as Pirates of the Caribbean.
I could probably pick just rides, but I wanted to expand. So for my number two, I've gone for the broad sort of category of evening fireworks, because I know, you know, they can change, but you know, fireworks sort of laser shows, but the evening thing, just as that, you know, before they let people out of the park, there's just the amount, the sheer amount of work that goes into these things, and the synchronization and the music and just the spectacle of it, and trying to find somewhere where you can actually sit and watch them, you know, that's always a challenge. But once you found that spot, you know, it's pretty special. And it's just, yeah, they're just a wonderful thing to see. And it's just it's a lovely capper. You know, you've spent a whole day, you've spent the whole day on your feet and you're tired, but you've had a great time. You're probably maybe a little bit sick after so many rides and you've eaten a turkey leg. And then you get to finish it with, you know, with just, ooh, ah, you know, it's lovely.
It's sort of the kiss goodnight, right, of your experience at the parks. And in fact, there is something called a kiss goodnight at Disney parks. And that's where the park closes and everyone's kind of lingering out. But the very last thing that happens, and very few guests are ever around to hear it, is there'll be a short recording of Walt. And he said, I forget what he says. I should know that for such an iconic Disney theme parks moment. But that is considered the actual kiss goodnight. But anyway, I digress. Right, you go to this fireworks show, and you're right, it's survival of the fittest to find your spot and to keep your spot, right? Yes. Finding your spot is only half the battle. You got to keep everyone else from sidling up too close, and there is a little bit of positioning there, and it's sort of some primal instincts start to come out when people are there. But some people, they pick their spot 2 hours ahead of time. And, you know, but so, yes, yeah, so the only thing that I would say that makes the fireworks challenging, it depends on what your staying power is, right? Because as soon as the fireworks are done, so many people just flood the gates and just leave. And now you're in a madhouse of, you know, waiting in lines for buses or for the ferry or the monorail or whatever it may be, the trams to get to the parking lot. If you have the staying power to linger in the park for just a little longer and let some of those crowds go away, you get some really quiet moments in the parks, and you can take some really cool photos or just have some peaceful time in the parks, which is, you know, because you just spent, you know, the better part of an hour or more, depending on how long you're waiting, with thousands of your closest friends in a very small area. So let them fight their way out of the park and kind of drift happily behind would be my suggestion there.
I like it. That's wonderful. What's number three?
Well, so number three for me was Space Mountain. So I'm glad you had that at number one, because that definitely is iconic. So I'm going to go in. We've been talking very dark, you know, dark attractions. I'm going to go the opposite, and I'm going to go to Big Thunder Mountain Railroad.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah. And it's, you know, for a lot of people, it's just a roller coaster. It doesn't have any complete flips or, you know, inversions or anything like that. But to me, the theming, and it's always what I love in a Disney attraction is the theming. So this is a very, I don't want to call it a mundane roller coaster, but it's a very usual roller coaster. It doesn't have anything super crazy going on. It goes up, it goes down, it goes side to side. But the fact that you take this trip on a runaway train through a abandoned, haunted, flooded out old mining town, and you get a couple of glimpses of the town. You're underground at one point, and you go in and out of tunnels, and it's really the southwestern theming around it that makes this attraction phenomenal for me. And if you want to shake it up a little bit too, you can ride that attraction at night as opposed to during the day, and you get a whole different experience, because that little town, it's Tumbleweed is the name of the fictional town. Not many people know that. Disney buries so much of the details so deep that, like, unless you're like this like mega Disney nerd, you'll never know most of these details. I feel like it's brilliant, but at the same time, like, they're just so hard to find. But yeah, so this little town is lit up at night, and it's a beautiful ride to do at night. And if you time it just right, it's a little bit of luck and a little bit of skill. You might catch the fireworks going off. That's a unique way to catch a little bit of the fireworks is while you're there circling Big Thunder Mountain.
Oh, I love it. Oh God, I'm itching to go back. Problem is, I don't have kids, and my nephews don't want to go.
yeah, are they more into the like the intense, you know, thrill rides at this point? The universals
they don't like
of
rides
the world.
At all.
Okay,
don't want to do it. No, I'll figure it out. Because I heard about a group that had done a pub crawl in Epcot, and I was like, I didn't know that was possible. Now that might be my 50th. It was going to be my 40th, but it didn't quite happen, so maybe I'll make it my 50th.
There are several ways to drink your way through Walt Disney World.
Yeah, and, that really surprises me.
People love to do the drink around the world
in
Epcot.
Yes, that's it.
The World Showcase. But then there's another one. There's the, I think it's called the Monorail pub crawl, where you take there's like a monorail loop that goes by Magic Kingdom, but it goes by the Contemporary Resort and the Polynesian and the Grand Floridian, three resorts that are on a loop right around and in front of Magic Kingdom. And they all have great restaurants and little, you know, smaller, like tavern pub style places. You can find a couple of places at each of those resorts to grab a drink and maybe a small bite if you'd like. So yeah, there's ways to drink your way through Walt Disney World if you're inclined.
Still, yeah, it boggles my mind that is a thing that, you know, just drunk in a theme park. Sounds great. Just a little bit tipsy. I don't want to be drunk, but a little bit tipsy in a theme park sounds ideal.
Right. Exactly.
Once all the rides have done. so my next one then is my number three is. Maybe bear with me. See how you land with this one. But I wanted to go with Cinderella's Castle.
Okay.
Because, you know, I've gone sort of inside and done all that stuff, and yeah, it's fine. But it's the, especially once you've been once, you see that and you just go, okay, I'm here. You know, like, I kind of got a little bit goosebumps there. It's just like, yeah, here we are. You know, we've arrived. It's such this iconic welcome to, like, not just welcome to Disney World, welcome to the idea of Disney. Welcome to the, you know, you've seen this on every Disney film, you know, and as soon as you get there, you straight away your brain just plays.
Yeah, it does.
And it's just an absolute, in the proper real sense of the word, an icon. And that's why I wanted it, you know, to be my number three. Not because I need to be near it, but to see it and to navigate by it. And, you know, it was always the thing that we said as kids, or we were told as kids, if you get lost, meet us at Cinderella's Castle. And just, it's the thing, you know, so.
it's the ultimate weenie. Walt Disney used to, when he designed Disneyland, he wanted every portion of the park to have a, like an icon, if you will. He called it a weenie. He actually called it that. It's a really random reason why.
Yeah.
He would, when he got home from the studios to his home, and he had his wife Lillian and two daughters, and they had a dog, and he had very simple tastes as far as food. He would get home, he would take a cold hot dog out of the fridge, and he would eat it. That's one of the things he liked. Chili, he liked hot dogs, like Midwestern American simple things. He would grab a hot dog out of the fridge and he would just walk around taking bites from it, which kind of grosses me out, but that was what he liked. And their dog would follow him around, like nose to him, and because the dog wanted a bite of the hot dog, the weenie. And so Walt's like, he incorporated that into his parks, whereas every park needs, every portion, every land in the park needs something to draw you towards it. Yeah, exactly. And Cinderella Castle is the ultimate weenie for Walt Disney, for Magic Kingdom and for Disneyland, you know, and Space Mountain is that for Tomorrowland and so forth. I'm impressed, and I'm excited that you put Cinderella Castle on your list because, you know, as we were talking, communicating pre-show about the top ride, so I'm thinking, here I am thinking I'm stepping out of the box by saying, well, rides are really attractions. Disney likes to differentiate, you know, an attraction is not just a ride, you know, it can be a show. And so, like when you said fireworks, like that's great because that is something you make a point to go do. Cinderella Castle is great for the iconic look. It actually is an attraction in Disneyland Paris. There's like an under the castle type of experience. I've never been, but you're a lot closer to maybe give that
closer,
a shot than
never
me.
Been.
Yeah. But there's some kind of attraction that has to do with a dragon hidden under the castle. I think it's a Sleeping Beauty-based attraction, maybe. But you know, Cinderella Castle in Magic Kingdom is more than just the castle. I mean, it does have the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique for kids to get their glam on. And then it has Cinderella's Royal Table, the restaurant that is up top. So you can do that. And then Disney does host people in, there's a royal suite actually in the castle as well, which you can't book, you can't pay for it. It's sort of one of those things that you either have to somehow get invited to experience it, or sometimes they allow you to win a night, like participate in a sweepstakes and win a night in the Cinderella Castle suite where you actually get to stay there overnight. And it sounds pretty incredible. I don't know how, I'm sure Disney has measures in place to keep people from just wandering the parks at night. I think we have this idea that like the park is going to be so quiet and you can go around and like, wow, what can I get into at night? I think that any of these Disney parks are largely decidedly not quiet at night. There's lots going on. There's cleaning, there's maintenance, there's getting things ready. There's decorating if it's in between seasons, or undecorating, if you will. So I think that a Disney park at night is probably anything but quiet and peaceful, but the idea that you could be staying in a Cinderella castle and get some kind of a bird's eye view of everything going on around you is a pretty amazing idea.
Fantastic. Okay, so what would be your next pick?
So I'm going to go with Classic Fantasyland and Peter Pan's Flight.
Hey, nice.
Yeah, and this is, so Peter Pan's one of my, it's probably my favorite animated Disney film and one of my favorite characters, and the idea, and it was one of Walt's as well. The idea of a boy that never grew up, and you know, you can grow old, but you don't have to grow up. And the idea of remembering that kid inside of you, even though life does happen and you do grow older, but you know, you can still remember the kid inside of you. And this hits me in all of those nostalgic feels, both for that and the fact that it's just one of those classic Fantasyland attractions. It's kind of neat because you get to fly in your tiny little sort of pirate ship looking boat. You're actually about probably 15, 16 feet off the ground, although it looks like you're higher because the miniaturization of all the details below you make you feel like you're quite a bit higher. But yeah, you fly through your, you know, you get to be with Peter Pan on his journey. It was the Disneyland version originally did not include Peter Pan because guests were, it, the immersion was such that the guests was expected to make pretend they were Peter Pan, so you didn't see Peter Pan. It was similar with the Snow White ride in Disneyland as well. Again, like so many guests were confused, like, where's Peter Pan? I don't understand it. So when it was constructed in Magic Kingdom, it was done so with Peter Pan in the attraction, and later on in Disneyland, it was changed to add Peter Pan to the attraction. So yeah, you see all the usual suspects, Peter, Wendy, Michael John, Captain Hook, of course, and you know, it's Disney Fantasyland dark ride at its in its purest form, and it's that nostalgia that really makes me put this one on my list.
Always a long queue for that one. I remember long queues for Peter Pan.
Yeah, and the queue is, you know, that's always one of those. There's a little bit of a misnomer that the long queue is because it's just so incredibly popular. I mean, it is popular, yes, But actually, the more the reason why the queue is so long is because the load rate. I was talking about how Pirates of the Caribbean, you get in and out of big boats and you're shuttled through at 2,400 guests an hour. Peter Pan, you max out at about 800 guests per hour. So say a third of that of Pirates of the Caribbean, because you're getting in these small little vehicles. You're not going to share a vehicle that could maybe fit four people, and you're not going to share it with another family or other, you know, it's not big enough to share. And it loads slower and it is just a smaller amount of people that can experience it. So those who want to are going to pay the price in terms of time. Yeah.
that makes a lot of sense. Superb. Okay. So, you already picked my number four, which is the Haunted Mansion, which is great. So I'm going to move on to my next one, which again, is, because I think you might pick what would be next down on my list. So I'm going to throw in for the parades, because again, I just think there's a lot of fun to be had here. It's very, very character-based. So, you know, what we've talked about so far is, yes, you get to enjoy some of the characters in terms of how they show up in the rides and stuff, but especially when you've got in the sort of early to mid-90s, you started to get a lot more of the wisecracking characters in Disney properties, and the parades are great for that, because then, you know, you get the voice artists, whether it's... I watched an interesting little video about the relationship with Robin Williams and Aladdin, and how cast members at Disney, you know, were apparently not allowed to use anything that Robin Williams had said as the character of Aladdin. But that aside, you've got all that stuff, you know, the characters that you know and love, they get to show up in massive, you know, form, with their little one-liners and things blasting over the speakers, and you've got all the music. And I think for that era of Disney, which felt, you know, sort of late 80s, early 90s, that was when I was going, and it felt like that was the real era of 2D animation. Lots of bright, wonderful characters that you could really get behind, and you know, lots of color. You know, you've got all the beauty, and, you know, big casts like Beauty and the Beast. You get to see Lumiere do his thing, and he's just, you know, waving his hands and sort of kissing at the audience or whatever, and all the dancers, and it's just another one like the fireworks. It's, you've really got to find your spot. And you might have to move around a little bit and poke under someone's legs or over shoulders or whatever. But I think it's, you know, it's just, they're just fun and vibrant and colorful. And maybe it's a chance to sit down for a bit before you go on to the next thing.
And there are a lot of different places where you can watch the fireworks. Not everyone has to crowd onto Main Street. You know, our family has tended to find a corner in Frontierland where it kind of comes out from around the corner in Frontierland. You never actually see where it starts, and that's part of the Disney magic of sort of, you know, you don't want to see the parade start and stop.
No, that's true.
Yeah, so they you know, it always...
It should emerge.
Exactly. It starts and it ends kind of around a corner, so you see the magic sort of drift out of view, but you don't see it end per se, and that's a part of the way that Disney keeps the story being fully immersive. But yeah, so we tend to catch it around there's a corner in actually it's Liberty Square, not so much Frontierland where we watch it, and it kind of turns a corner there. But yeah, it's great because you get the larger floats where characters, the princesses usually and Mickey or whatever, are on top of these giant floats, interspersed in between with the sort of the foot traffic characters who dance around, and some characters, sometimes they're dancers just kind of dancing, and certain other times they're actual characters. And, you know, it's so fun to see that they express the character's personality without words so often, especially the ones that are kind of on ground level, and they come over and greet you for a moment. And the mannerisms usually match up to some degree with the character's personality, and it's an experience, like you said, that you don't have to be moving and getting whipped around on a ride in order to have an exhilarating experience. And parades are great for that. They're a lot of fun.
Lovely. What is so we agreed on, I think, number three. So what would be your number six to put into number five?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to go back to Tomorrowland, and this it is a ride. It's an attraction. It's not thrilling by any means. But it's just, it's got almost a cult status of for people who like this thing, and of which I consider myself one. It's the Tomorrowland Transit Authority People Mover. And it's exceedingly simple. I mean, you're there in Tomorrowland in the busyness of the area, and you go up a ramp, a moving ramp to a second floor, sort of a spinning loading circle. You're on a simple tram that takes you on a leisurely ride around Tomorrowland. You go around you go through a portion of Space Mountain where you can see the coasters going overhead. And you go around the Monsters Incorporated laugh floor and the building formerly known as Stitch's Great Escape, or whatever that may become of it in the future. Great views of Cinderella Castle. And this is another one where if you time a ride on the People Mover for the right time of the evening, you can catch some fireworks while you're on it. But by and large, it's like a 5 or 6 minute leisurely stroll around Tomorrowland, and taking in the sights and the sounds, and there's a little bit of narration that goes along with it. Tomorrowland is probably overall my least favorite land, just because I find it's very crowded, and I just find it, I wouldn't say quite stressful, but there's a degree there that I don't love. But that's the attraction that sort of elevates you above the stress and the hustle and bustle of Tomorrowland. And for that, I appreciate the People Mover. And you can catch a little bit of Walt Disney history as well. At one point, you're going by one of the show buildings and you go in a small tunnel and you can see this sort of model of a city of the future. And what that was it was called Progress Land, which was Walt's initial vision of what would later become his idea for Epcot, which never came to be. But so, yeah, it's called Progress City. And that model was stationed in Disneyland for years alongside the Carousel of Progress. But then when the Carousel of Progress packed up in Disneyland and it was moved to Magic Kingdom, the Progress City model was displaced and a large portion of that was put back into place in Tomorrowland. So you can see that as you're going through on the People Mover, you're in a completely dark tunnel and you see off to the right, there's the city of the future, which I always kind of hope that the People Mover would pause or break down for a few minutes so I could actually study it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. But I've never been so lucky. But yeah, so that's a nice little piece of Walt Disney history that's mixed in on that ride.
So we've talked about just about everything else. So my last one that I have, which is the Jungle Cruise.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, it's probably not going to make the final five, but it's perfectly, you know, fun and nice. And I think... I'm trying to remember now. It wasn't Magic Kingdom, was it? Or was it? We went the last time and we did one of the animal attractions and every animal had their wiener out.
Were you at Disney's Animal Kingdom, maybe? Were you doing the safari?
Probably Animal Kingdom for that one, yeah. And we were on a ride there. And, they were all hanging their exquisite, yes. But yeah, it's, you know, it's just, it's one of those fun rides. And the cast members are doing their best, you know, to deliver a unique experience every time. And it's just, it's one of the ones that you do. And it's just fun. And, you know, it didn't make my top five, but, it had to have a mention, I think.
It's iconic in its own way, right? The skiffs that you're on, the boats, I think in Disneyland, they're like a red and white striped tarp on them. They may not be that color in Magic Kingdom. I can't remember. But the skipper that you have for the cruise can sometimes make or break it because there's a script that they follow. There's certain, you know, there's always the backside of water and some other bad jokes that are, they're funny jokes, right? And the puns and so forth. And there's a certain amount of that that they're scripted to need to do. And then I think there's a little bit of improv that they can contribute as well. But yeah, that was, Walt Disney originally wanted the Jungle Cruise to have actual jungle animals on it and quickly came to the realization that that couldn't work for many, many reasons. So the inclusion of the safari at Animal Kingdom is sort of the realization of an early dream that Walt Disney had. But yeah, and then originally the Jungle Cruise was really meant to be more serious and exploratory, and Mark Davis, another Disney legend, he's known for his sense of humor. He's the one who added a bunch of humor to the Haunted Mansion so that it wasn't just a scary, creepy ride. Add a lot of funny moments to it. And he did the same thing to the Jungle Cruise. So I think it makes it so that you can re-ride it many times and you'll get some sense of humor out of every trip. And it gives the attraction some staying power. So that's a good pick.
Turbo enthusiasm at its best, right? This is no, you know, no shade, but this is one of a few conversations that went long, and there's, you know, we've had to leave a few things on the cutting room floor because there's so much, so much information and so much just enjoyable, really digging into a thing. I absolutely love it, but I'm trying to keep these episodes to a somewhat manageable length, I'm doing my best, but I absolutely loved every minute of this conversation. So James, thank you very much. James is the creator, the man behind Facts and Figment, which you'll find at factsandfigment.com. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on as well. So yeah, check the link in the show notes if you want to go check it out, if you want to get your Disney nerd on. Speaking of nerding out about things and being enthusiastic, I'm enthusiastic about podcasts. That's probably not surprising. It is my day job after all. If you are interested at all in what good podcasts sound like, if you are a podcast listener, as I think you are, and you fancy adding some new stuff to your queue, I may just have the thing for you. I write a weekly newsletter called The Big Minute. I did, and I'm now bringing it back, much like I brought back List Envy. I'm like, what other thing could I bring back that's fun? And so I've decided to bring back The Big Minute. This is a newsletter where every week I profile a single minute of audio and tell you why it's good, from my professional opinion, and so I've got a nice one lined up actually for this week. So if that sounds like your bag, if you want to discover new podcasts or you're kind of just interested in like what might make them sound good, then thebigminute.com is where you can go. Now all roads lead to my website. So if you go to listenvypod.com, it goes back to my website. Now everything is at my website. But, make your life easier rather than giving you a whole bunch of slashes to contend with. You will find that newsletter at thebigminute.com. And I recommend it as a read. It's short and it's fun and much like me. Right. Should we get back to this episode? I tell you what, I keep doing this. You can't see me, of course, but I keep making this sort of definitive gesture with my hands. And it's like, you know, it's kind of an annoying noise for you to contend with. So I'm going to stop doing that. And I think we should get back to this episode. We have got a very important task. We've got to build our top five list of Disney World attractions, specifically, of course, Magic Kingdom attractions. And I don't know about you, but I am hankering to get back on a plane and get over to Disney World and do some bloody rides. I've taken the liberty of making a provisional draft, which I would like to run by you and see what your thoughts are, and we can make adjustments as necessary. From 5-1, I'm going Cinderella's Castle, Big Thunder Mountain, Pirates of the Caribbean, Space Mountain, Haunted Mansion. Thoughts?
All right. So, and this list is very much crafted. My list based on a very, right now is a specific moment in time where one of what I would consider the top five best attractions is Splash Mountain is closed and will be reopening this summer as Tiana's Bayou Adventure themed to the Princess and the Frog.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and I know you alluded to it earlier, that that's the one that sort of drew some of the characters are from Song of the South, which was, you know, there's definite racial overtones in Song of the South.
There's plenty to commend it, but also,
Yeah. So it was controversial from the moment it was released, and not because it was meant to be insensitive. It was just sort of a little bit of the times as well.
But the songs, they're so good.
They are. And it's such a fun attraction. And like you said, sometimes these things get rethemed. And so this the bones of the attraction are going to look, I would say, close to identical. It's still a flume. You're still going up and down at the end, and you're going to splash down, and there's different, you know, there's the ride track. You're going to be inside and outside, all that stuff. It's just going to all be themed to the Princess and the Frog, with the storyline going that Tiana, the princess, she is now, since the completion of the film, she has now established her restaurant, and she has a whole food co-op business down in New Orleans, and she's throwing a big party, and she needs some additional music, and so she goes out to the bayou to find some musically inclined friends, and that's the story. It's we'll see how well the story flies, but I'm sure that Splash Mountain, just the bones of Splash Mountain, make it a great attraction. So if the story is half decent for Tiana's Bayou Adventure, then I'm sure that this would make it back onto a top five list. But right now, neither of those attractions exist. It's in that in the middle space, so it can't be on our list right now. So yeah, I absolutely consent to your list.
Well, are there any other honorable mentions that we haven't talked about?
So there's. People love, right, what do people like in an attraction or in a ride? Some like a family-friendly thing, some like a thrill, right? So there's a new roller coaster in Magic Kingdom. It didn't make my list. It was off by a little bit. I actually haven't had the chance to ride it. It's been open for maybe a year at most. It's themed after the film Tron.
Oh, yes. So it's,
yeah, the Tron Light Cycle Run, and appropriately that's located in Tomorrowland. From all accounts, it's an exhilarating attraction, but it's also very short. It's like 30 or like 40 seconds, something like that, or at least it feels that short. But it supposedly for what you get of it, it's an amazing attraction. So I'm thinking as far as should it make a list, that, you know, it's close.
In a couple of years, maybe we've got a re-listigation on our hands. You know, we can revisit and see what the state is.
Quite possibly. And then when we're talking about the People Mover, in terms of just, you just want to relax for a little bit, right in the same vein as the People Mover, I would put the Walt Disney World Railroad on there. And if you just want to take a gentle lap around the park, you can actually use it for transportation. You can get off in Frontierland or in Fantasyland, or you can just ride it. And, you know, Walt Disney's love of trains is somewhat legendary to the fact that, you know, we had a train around his home in Hollywood.
Well, tell us just before we head out of here and get our sort of Walt Disney kiss goodnight. Why don't you tell me all about Facts and Figment?
Sure. So, yeah, Facts and Figment, it's a site that I have. I write about, like I said, all things Disney. It's history. It's films, television. It includes Star Wars and Marvel because they're all a part of Disney now. Pixar, of course. So I have lots of great trivia on my site. Lots of fun top 10 lists of favorite this or favorite that. Then aside from that, I also do actually travel planning, vacation planning, primarily to Disney and Universal destinations. So that's sort of a side piece of what I do as well. And that includes Walt Disney World, Disneyland, the Disney Cruise Lines, and then Disney has a resort in Hawaii as well. And then, of course, Disney does these little charter adventures around the world. They call it Adventures by Disney. And I also do Universal trip planning as well in Orlando and Hollywood. So I'm always happy to help people find a way to get there to the magic and try to save a little bit of money while I'm at it. There's always new discounts coming out, and some of them are a little bit tough to secure, right? It's like 30% off of your whole vacation, but you got to book in certain dates and you got to do this and you got to do that. So sometimes those can be a little bit difficult to navigate. So I'm always happy to help people do that. So factsandfigment.com is my site. And then I'm also on social at both Facebook and Instagram under Disney Facts and Figment. And facts, obviously, is F-A-C-T-S, not facts like the fax machine. So Disney Facts and Figment. And then on Twitter or X, it's just at Facts and Figment.
Jim, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me on List Envy today.
Thanks for having me. This has been a blast. I appreciate it, Mark.